From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we're meeting the two people hoping to be the next mayor of the city of Southport. We'll also meet one candidate running for Southport's Board of Aldermen in Ward 1. Karen Mosteller is also the only incumbent seeking re-election in that ward. The other person with an expiring term, Mary Ellen Poole, is not running again. The small seaside city of Southport in Brunswick County, which calls itself the home of salubrious breezes, is divided into two wards, each represented by three people to make up a six-member board. The mayor of the city of Southport serves a two-year term. Aldermen serve four-year terms, which are staggered. In 2010, the city boasted a population of slightly more than 2,800 people. Today, the Census Bureau estimates about 3,600 people call Southport home. Each candidate will talk one-on-one with me today, answering my questions and yours. There are two ways to get your question in during the live Wednesday edition. You can email us at coastline@whqr.org or call us at 910-343-1138. The phone lines are open now, and remember, each candidate appears in only one segment. Today's candidates, with the exception of this next one, are joining us in an order randomly chosen before the show. Joining us now is Karen Mosteller. She has owned her home in Southport since the late 1990s. Before joining the Board of Aldermen, she served on the Planning Board for Southport. According to her campaign website, she grew up in Greensboro. She is currently the Architectural Review Coordinator for Baldhead Association, the largest homeowners association on Baldhead Island, also in Brunswick County. Before that, she says she owned a small business and worked as a realtor. Karen Mosteller, welcome to Coastline.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
And if you have your own question for her, call us on this Wednesday, 910-343-1138, or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Karen Mosteller, let's start with the big picture. What's your long-term vision for the city of Southport?
My long-term vision is that in 100 years, whoever's living in my house is having the same experience I am. That would be, if I had a long-term vision,
What is that experience? Describe it.
That experience is a small town, and it's that experience is a historically small town, like where you know your neighbors and where you ride a bike to the restaurant and meet your neighbors and cook with your neighbors. And the town, we have a simple waterfront. I think sometimes we have so many visitors. But they are always smiling, and they always talk about how friendly Southport is. And I mean, even people moving there, new people moving there, always comment about how friendly Southport people are. But when our waterfront is so simple, when you walk up, it's not a paved and, you know, it's not all she, this and that. But it's the simplicity of it and the simple access to the water that's free that we have, which to me speaks to our small town character.
I don't usually bring up what happened during the sound check in a Coastline candidate interview, but I think this is relevant. I asked you, for the purpose of a mic check, where you would travel, and you could time travel if you could go anywhere, and you got very emotional and said you would go back to a time in Southport's history, and this wasn't supposed to be a candidate question, where the trees lined Howe Street. Tell us about that and why that's so important to you.
I think I would have loved to have seen that, you know. Everyone, I get kind of emotional. Everyone in Southport treasures the trees. You know, our waterfront is our economic lifeline, to be sure. But if you want to look for a close second of what we value in Southport, it's going to be our live oak trees. And I, I read something. The Historical Society has these photos that I've seen from them, and it was women in the pharmacy, what used to be the pharmacy when it was really the pharmacy, at a table, and they were mourning those trees coming down. And I can't imagine how it must have felt to be able to drive into Southport down Howe Street, the main street, and the trees be there like that.
As the current liaison on the Board of Aldermen to the Forestry Committee on Southport, that has been kind of a tough nut to crack, pun not intended. There is no clear tree preservation guideline, although the Forestry Committee, as you know, has submitted a text amendment to move forward on this issue. If you didn't have to build consensus, where would you shape that policy? How would you make that tree preservation guideline develop in Southport? What needs to happen that isn't there now?
Well, first of all, we are in the process of bringing forward a tree preservation ordinance. And it's really updating. There was some language already in the UDO, and this is really an update and fleshing out this. In 2011, the Board of Aldermen at that time endorsed a tree plan, and it was a plan about how to care for the trees, and a big, huge document. And then what was to be the sister of that was a tree ordinance, and then because of changes in, I think, city management and planning staff and different things, and so I think that piece of the puzzle never came to fruition, per se. And so now the Forestry Committee has spent the last 15 months working on this document and vetting this document with the School of Government and just different sources. The upshot is, I'm getting lost in it, the upshot is that that document is now in the hands of the planning board, and there will be, at the next planning board meeting, there will be a workshop to discuss it. And back to now how to make a watch, and here's the real answer to your question. What this tree preservation ordinance will create a dialogue. It'll give an opportunity to have a conversation. You know, it's purposefully not onerous on property owners or builders. It's a way to work with everybody's concerns and all the stakeholders. But its primary purpose is to create a vehicle for a conversation. You get a tree permit, so that opens up. It may be that you are thinking you have to take that tree down because you think you have to have parking in this one spot. Well, it may be something that with a conversation through planning and through the ordinance and doing a tree permit, that you find that maybe a variance can be given for that. And so the tree can stay. You can have it all. You can have what you need and keep the tree. So the real purpose of this is to create a dialogue before.
So every time a potential issue comes up where someone might want to take out a tree, instead of just pursuing that route, they would have a dialogue with the city of Southport.
Well, depending on where the tree is. I mean, there are caveats to it, so it's not removing every tree or any of that conversation. But it provides in those situations. And developers, as an example, we had a development that is now being built out, and I'm sure they're going to put back a lot of good stuff, but we did not have, I was on the planning board at the time, and I asked if we could not ask to save some of those trees, and we really didn't have a vehicle to do that, so that wasn't something we could ask of new developer. And developers always want to help. A developer wants to do whatever the city wants them to do. They just need to know what it is. And so, anyway.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. With us now answering your questions, Karen Mosteller. She's running for a second term on Southport's Board of Aldermen in Ward 1. You can ask your own question during the live Wednesday edition by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Karen Mosteller, you are in a unique position, a full-time job on Bald Head Island. Yeah. Serving on Southport's Board of Aldermen, you recently offered to recuse yourself from voting to approve a transportation authority for Bald Head Island's ferry service, eventually moving this service under the purview of the state. Your offer of recusal was accepted. Can you explain why you thought it important to make that offer of recusal? And also, what assurance would Southport stakeholders have that if there are conflicts between the agenda of Baldhead Island and the agenda of Southport, you would move forward with Southport's best interests?
Well, you can just rest assured of that. But I actually work for the HOA. I don't work for the developer. I don't work for the city. So their political conversation and those things are not part of what I do and not part of anything that I do. The reason I recused myself from that vote was really more as a perception. You know, the mayor asked at the beginning of the meeting any perception of a conflict of interest. And I did not, it was not necessary for me to participate in those votes. I asked to not participate because I did, even though. So this is the deal. With the ferry system currently is owned by the developer. Well, the developer is still a property owner. So they have, by virtue of being a property owner, I review their submittals for the HOA. So I just, even though that I don't collect money directly from them or whatever, but my salary is paid by homeowners. So ultimately. So I just didn't want the appearance of that is really what that was all about.
Can you think of another example where that could come up in the future?
Don't want a perception of a conflict. You know, really I can't because the ferry is the one thing that we have in common. You know, we have 70 some acres on our side that's going to be part of that ferry system. So that's really the only conversation I could ever see.
If you win re-election, where do you see the electrical grid going? Does it make sense to keep it under the auspices, the control of Southport, or should this component eventually go over to Brunswick Electric?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. And up until the past probably 6 months, I might have thought differently, but I'd have to tell you that public power, which is what we are now, electric cities is where we buy our power. The public power is a really good thing, and affordability. Right now, if you're able to qualify for all of our load management reductions, you have the lowest rate for electricity, I know in Brunswick County, but it may even be larger than that. Could be even statewide. I don't know. But I do know in Brunswick County, you have the lowest rate. And part of that is public power. And the thing people don't realize, it's not just that we're just buying power from them. There's a lot of cities that do public power, and they, by doing public power, it's as if we've got our own corporation. They helped us redo our website. So everybody needs to go to the new Southport website. It is awesome. Just they have a whole plethora of services that we get just like we would if we were with another corporation, but then we have so many participants that it makes us stronger, especially as a small town.
A hotel is planned for Southport's riverfront. The planning board approved this project to the dismay of nearby property owners. There are really two questions here. First, the specific question about the project. Now that the developer is planning to sell rooms to investors and then have those rented out, is he operating with what the city approved as that business?
As far as I know, he is. The hotel. The zoning for that piece of property allowed that. So there was no conversation really to be had to say, no, you can't do that. So you know, I don't want that to be a misconception.
So that's just a black and white
policy. That was a conversation, question. Right. That was, you know, the UDO provided the ability to do that and
so
the right of use.
The larger question, you as an alderman, how do you balance the desires of neighboring property owners with developers' interests, the balance of forward motion in Southport with staying true to the original kind of small town Southport ethos?
That's an awesome question. I look forward to updating the UDO. I think the UDO and zoning is, you know, that we need to update that periodically is important because that very conversation you've just said of how do we respond to things and how do we plan for our future and control it. We're working right now, the planning board is working on the creation, hopefully, of an entry corridor overlay district for that very reason. That responds to a lot of the question you're talking about. So that we're not trying to control the businesses that are there because, you know what I mean, the service or whatever it is, the business. But if we can keep it looking like it belongs to Southport, then long-term, our sustainability in who we are will be maintained.
And that's our time. Karen Mosteller, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. When we come back, we'll meet the first of two candidates for Mayor of Southport, Joe Pat Hatem. And we're taking your questions during this live Wednesday discussion by phone at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Now we're meeting the two men running for mayor of the city of Southport. The city was founded as Smithville in 1792. It was 1887 when the name changed to Southport. The U.S. Census Bureau estimates the population of Southport last year was about 3,600 people. Jerry Dove is the current mayor of Southport. He was elected in 2015 and is seeking his second term. Joseph Hatem, a medical doctor and longtime resident of Southport, is challenging Mayor Dove for the second time. Joe Pat Hatem is joining us now, a native of Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina, and a doctor who practices at Southport's Dozier Memorial Hospital. It was 30 years ago, he says, that he started moonlighting in Dozier's emergency room while doing his residency at New Hanover Regional Medical Center. Joe Pat Hatem, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Of course, you can ask your own question of our candidates today by calling us during the live Wednesday edition at 910-343-1138 or by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. Joe Pat Hatem, the campaign slogan on your website is A Better Way Forward. What does that mean? And if you did not win the seat this year, what would be the worst way forward?
The worst way forward for mayor of the city?
Whatever that means on your website, a better way forward.
All right. A better way forward is the theme that we came up with. I have a group of men that we met with prior to finally deciding to run and that type of thing. They encouraged me to run. And a better way forward is how do we go? What is the next step in terms of Southport's future? What is the strategic plan? And what are the plans for solving the problems that we have? What we've noticed is that the last 2 years have not been very robust in terms of solving the problems or developing a vision or a strategic plan for our city. For example, the waterfront. 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, there was a waterfront plan, consultants, $180,000 project. And this project has not been implemented at all over the last 2 years, whether it's finding someone to help write grants or looking at river foundations who would be interested in erosion control, preservation, our environment. How are we accessing our state legislators, our congressmen?
So to expand on this waterfront plan for a second, because we had a caller ask about this. $180,000 spent, but was this part of a beautification committee effort, or you mentioned erosion control, which is more than that. What exactly is this project?
This project, the most important part of it is erosion control. If we lose our waterfront, if we don't fix the drainage process, Southport's greatest industry is tourism. And the reason people come to Southport is because of our waterfront. And we have these marvelous businesses on the waterfront, these restaurants that people come to. I mean, on a Friday night, Saturday night during the summer, it is one of the most festive places in our state. And it's a beautiful setting. There are 4,000 feet of waterfront, and there are certain things that can be done, coastline revetments, planting certain plants to stabilize it, getting the Ballhead Ferry to slow down, which is the biggest source of our erosion problem. So that's what I mean by the waterfront project.
And part of the movement on that was for this bill to go through the legislature that would allow Southport and other municipalities, potentially in Brunswick County, to charge an additional tax up to 0.5% on prepared food and beverages, specifically to address that erosion problem.
So that's
some movement. If you were mayor of Southport, what would you be doing differently in terms of working with the General Assembly?
Well, I would be up there once a week until we got some funds. You can call now, you can text, you can write, you can go up there. You just have to have a presence. You have to have a relationship with them. Senator Rabin, our legislator Frank Eiler, they're close friends. We're all Eagle Scouts. I think I have a good rapport with them, and so that is where I would start, our county commissioners.
So you're saying you would like more money from the state than just this ability to charge the additional tax?
Absolutely. We're looking at $3.4 million, so we want to look at every avenue and maximize every way of funding this project possible.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. With us now, answering your questions, is Joe Pat Hatem. He's seeking the mayoral seat in the city of Southport. You can ask your own question on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. Southport recently hired a new city manager after Carrie McDuffie left. He filled that role for about 3.5 years. What's the biggest challenge that you see facing the new manager, Bruce Oakley, and how do you see the role of the mayor and the board of aldermen when it comes to working with staff on those challenges?
I think the greatest challenge he's going to have is the greatest challenge that I see is how do we preserve our beautiful heritage, our quaint village, while promoting economic development. Change is going to come to Southport. Change is coming. We're a fast-growing county, Brunswick County is. So how do we mitigate those changes? How do we keep a hotel from landing in a neighborhood?
Are you talking about the hotel?
Yes.
Going up on the riverfront?
Yes, that potentially was going up. They've scaled it down now, and the town has responded. The ordinance has been changed, so now the maximum number of rooms is 10. So it's our UDO that we have to be careful with in terms of going over very carefully. Our Southport Planning Board, my wife is chairman of the Planning Board, and they've done a great job with that, and they're continuing to look at that. So in terms of the city manager, that would be the greatest challenge, our heritage versus growth. How, in terms of interacting with the Board of Aldermen, the mayor has to inspire the Board of Aldermen. He has to be a policy person. There's a quote from John Adams, "Let us dare to read, think, speak, and write." And I hold that close. If we're not reading, we're not researching before we speak, and then we're not talking about it, writing about it. If we're not in our neighborhoods, in our communities, I want to have every alderman to be successful in their wards. I want to work with each one of them. And I want to be a mayor that is a voice for all of the citizens. You know, it's recently, last year in terms of the hotel, we had a couple that wrote this impassioned long letter that was put in the State Port Pilot. And so I went in my campaign, I went to them, I said, well, did the mayor call you Wednesday night after this letter? The paper comes out on Wednesday. No. Well, did he go by your house on Thursday? No. If someone is that concerned and upset and a citizen of Southport, you know, you read the paper for information. You also read it for who do I need to see? Who do I need to call? We should be on that. Whatever the problem is, if I'm mayor, I'm calling or I'll be on their front step the next day.
I wouldn't normally bring up the appearance of a candidate. We don't have a camera in here, but I think this is worth mentioning. I think you're the first candidate who's walked in here wearing a bright red polka-dotted bow tie and bright red high tops. Can you just talk about the choice there? Because clearly that means that there's a significance.
Yes. Well, thank you for noticing. What happened was when I was an intern at New Hanover, we wore, you know, dress shoes, khakis, white jacket, tie every day during the day. But at night when you were on call, you could wear scrubs. And I wore Chuck Taylor high tops. I'd been wearing them all my life. And my father was a merchant. He sold them in his store. So I've been wearing them a long time in different colors over the years. But when I'd work in the ER at Dozier, scrubs, because it was weekends and nights. So I had scrubs and high tops and started wearing red. And I found that children, pediatric patients, saw some guy coming in with red shoes and they were just a little less afraid. And I said, well, if that will give me an advantage with the child, then I'm going to do it. And then it got to the point where I just kept wearing them because, you know, people either say they're less afraid of this person coming in with the red shoes or they're going, dear God, that's my doctor. What am I going to do now? So that's how it started. And so I've evolved just wearing them ever since. They may not know my name, but they know the doctor with the red shoes. And so hopefully they had a good experience with me. And if they didn't, then they know who to talk about and say, that doctor with the red shoes.
You ran the last time around in 2015,
yes.
And also facing Jerry Dove for the mayoral seat in Southport. Lost by about 79 votes, which equates to almost 7%. What does that tell you? And why, with what sounds like an extremely demanding full-time job, would you want to be in a position? Why do you want to take this on where you might need to go visit people who've written impassioned letters to the State Port Pilot?
It gives me an opportunity to serve, another way to serve our community. I find it a very intellectually challenging, creative process. I'm very passionate about Southport. I love Southport. I want Southport to be seen through the eyes of the young boy Robert Ruark. I want people to come to town and they know who he is and know that the old man, you know, that first sentence, the old man pretty much knew everything. So that's why I want to do it. And in terms of my, you know, demanding job, you know, I think I make a difference at the hospital. I think I can make a difference for the city of Southport, improving the quality of life of all its citizens. I'm an independent contractor, so I have a flexible schedule. And I talked to the administrator before I even filed for office. And he was very supportive of this. So why I want to do it, it's to serve. It just basically, and the other thing is that I was asked to do this again. I had not really planned to run, but a group of individuals, in fact, 6 months prior, even patients I was seeing in the hospital that were citizens of Southport, you're going to run again, aren't you? And I'm going, no, I'm not going to run again. You know, I just really hadn't thought about it that hard. So that's why it's going to be a great chance to serve, and I'm looking forward to it.
If you are elected, where do you see the electrical grid going? Does it make sense to keep it under the auspices, the control of the city of Southport, or should this component get passed over to Brunswick Electric?
Well, that would require, you know, more research than I've been privy to in that regard. But right now, the city's grid is solid. Brunswick Electric, we have the contract with them, and it's working out well right now. We get our energy from Duke Power. Part of the problem is the lines coming into our grid. That's where we lose that, lose our power at times. One of the things we need to look into is, you know, Brunswick Electric also has lines there. Can we have a secondary line in case the line from Duke Energy goes down? Can we have a quick backup? And the other thing is we have to think about, but it's so financially prohibitive, is putting the lines underneath, putting them in the ground.
So and where there are you on that? How much of a priority is that?
You know, it's we have to prioritize, you know, our things. And that's not at the top because it's so expensive. I think there are other things that need to be done with infrastructure, our waterfront, things like that, before we get to that project.
So then let's talk about how you would keep Southport on solid financial footing. Are there parts of the budget that you think where you think the current administration just spends too much? Are there areas to cut?
You know, the budget is 45 pages, and I've been looking at it, but you it's hard to absorb when you've not been part of that process until, you know, more recently. Let's say, well, first of all, we have to support our first responders, our fire, our rescue. They have to have the equipment that they need. And our city employees have to have good health coverage and things like that. But in terms of purchasing one vehicle versus another, if you can, it's not like we're a big town. We don't need big SUVs and things like that. Maybe we could get by with a $22,000 vehicle instead of a $44,000 vehicle. And if there are things that need to be purchased, let's make sure that we are getting the best deal possible. Are we doing the research? You know, what is the age of the vehicle that we're replacing? How many miles? Why are we replacing it? Can it be fixed? I mean, we just really need to, line by line, going over this budget.
And just very briefly, in light of the news about unregulated and potentially toxic chemical compounds in the Cape Fear River,
yes.
How does that affect Southport? What does that do to your planning if you are elected?
Well, when I ran 2 years ago, it was for the health of our city, and one of it was for the health of our environment, and I put in there clean water, clean air, and this was long before Gen X. And someone came up to me and says, we already have clean water. I says, well, we have to be vigilant. So our campaign is very pro-environment, clean water, clean air, absolutely. And we have to measure for these toxins.
Joe Pat Hatem, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was my pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. When we come back, we'll meet the other candidate hoping to be the next mayor of Southport, incumbent Jerry Dove, and we're taking your questions during the live Wednesday discussion by phone at 910-343-1138 or by email at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're meeting the two men running for mayor of Southport. Southport is a 225-year-old city that spans less than 4 square miles and sits near the confluence of the Cape Fear River and the Atlantic Ocean in Brunswick County. It was voted America's happiest seaside town by Coastal Living in 2015. In 2010, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, Southport's population was slightly more than 2,800. Today, the Bureau estimates it's home to about 3,600 people. In 2015, the last municipal election year in North Carolina, Jerry Dove ran against Joe Pat Hatem. Jerry Dove won the seat by 79 votes, or a difference of about 7%. If ever you wondered whether your vote counts, here's a clear example of when it absolutely does. And joining us now is Mayor Jerry Dove completing his term and seeking a second. Before serving as Southport's mayor, Jerry Dove spent 12 years as chief of police in Southport. That is in addition to the 9 years he spent as an officer, shift supervisor, and canine handler. He worked as a master trooper with the North Carolina State Highway Patrol for 26 years. He has served in the U.S. Army Reserve and the United States Air Force. And in 2007, Jerry Dove was awarded the Order of the Longleaf Pine. Jerry Dove, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for Thank you. Thank you for having me here today.
You can ask your own question of our candidate on this live Wednesday edition by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org or giving us a call at 910-343-1138. Mayor Jerry Dove, so many people identify Southport's next big nut to crack as finding that balance between forward motion, progress, and maintaining that small town Southport ethos that makes it such a charming place to live in the first place. How do you see Southport moving forward? What's the long-term vision?
Well, you know, I've always said that Southport is kind of a city where the past and the present meet one another. And so many people in town, they say, I wish we could go back 30 or 40 years. So do I. I've been there 37 years. And I wish we could go back to those times. But, you know, progress is going to take its place. But there's one thing that we can hold on to, and that's the spirit of Southport, the traditional neighborhoods, the friendliness of our people. That's what keeps drawing people there. It keeps drawing them there, and that's why we have experienced this growth in our city over these many years. Not only that, it's because of our people, what they seek, our recreational facilities, all of the amenities that we have to offer, the beauty of our city, and all of those things.
And now that Southport has attracted so much attention, and certainly in 2015 when it was the happiest seaside, I'm not sure what that designation exactly was, but by Coastal Living, the happiest seaside city or something, what kind of controls need to go in that perhaps haven't been there before to make sure that Southport maintains its character?
Well, we are looking forward to our vision for the future, and the board has worked on this problem here. Number one, with all the influx of the new people that have arrived, I'm going to give you an example. When I came to Southport that many years ago, our population down there was only about 1,200 people. And now you can see how many we've expanded here, over 3,000. And in during tourist seasons and summertime and recreational seasons, we have a lot more people come in than that. Now, what has that done? That has taxed our infrastructure, and we must plan for that. Number one, our transportation, our highway system. And the city is working closely with the DOT to provide those roadways and sidewalks necessary to transport our people. The other thing, too, that draws people to Southport is the age-old thing that draws all people to cities to begin with. Number one, for necessities, for conveniences, for things like water and sewer, which we must maintain for them, for water, for safety reasons, for our police departments, for our fire departments, our rescue squads. And we're fortunate we have a hospital in our city. And all of those things kind of draw people there. And we must prepare for that.
If you are reelected, will this administration, this next administration, begin work on a strategic vision, on a long-term plan for Southport? And why has it taken this long to start talking about one?
Well, we do have a strategic plan for Southport. We do have one. It's been in place for many years. As a matter of fact, I looked at it with the planning director yesterday before I came up here, and it is a vision that we maintain what we have there, that traditional small-town charm, and also prepare for the growth that we expect to provide to all these citizens.
When was that plan first published?
I can't tell you the exact date. But it's been in place there ever since I've worked for the city. So
there is no clear tree preservation guideline right now in the city of Southport's Unified Development Ordinance, although there are tree protections, which are not part of that. And according to the State Port Pilot, a Southport Forestry Committee recently submitted a text amendment to the board that would require a number of things. Developers and builders would have to submit a tree plan for approval, would require greater protections for heritage trees, some of those spectacular live oaks that people love about Southport. What do you think needs to change about the current ordinance?
I'm number one, I'm all for tree preservations. I love that. That's part of the beauty and uniqueness of our city to begin with. My wife told me not to quote any poems that I learned in the seventh grade, but I'm going to quote Robert Louis Stevenson, who said that the uniqueness of a tree, that it emanates fresh water, is bountiful to a weary spirit. And that's so true, those words. It's part of our uniqueness. And not only that, it's part of our natural resources down there. A lot of people don't realize this. Yeah, we look at a tree, and we need to preserve that for future generations. Not only that, but not only for the beauty of the tree, but it also does a lot of things that we don't think about. Stormwater drain off, it helps with that. It helps conserve energy. It helps shade our streets. And I didn't even know this for a long time, but it helps prevent maintenance on our highways. By shading the areas and covering our roadways coming into town. And not only that, it provides shelter for our wildlife, too. Not only that, but building materials for our homes. So I'm all for that, and I'm glad that we're moving ahead on that.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. With us now, answering your questions, is Jerry Dove. He is the current mayor of Southport, seeking his second term. You can ask your own question during this live Wednesday edition by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. Mayor Jerry Dove, are you a poetry fan?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Not what one might expect from a longtime police officer, police chief, and state trooper. If you win your mayoral seat again,
yes, ma'am,
where do you see the electrical grid going? Does it make sense to keep it under the auspices, the control of the city of Southport, or should this eventually get passed over to a larger entity?
No. I remember when we were in the electrical business, and it's more economical. Savings to our taxpayers and our citizens, plus better service to do what we're doing with it now, and that's contracting with Brunswick Electric. Now, we do have some plans to place some of our electrical lines underground. This is going to help us, especially during storms. And one of the reasons that I say that is because when we did have our electrical system, or we had our electric department, I should say, managed by the city of Southport, we only had about three or four members of that. And you can see when we have outages, and we have storms down there, not only hurricanes, but we have tropical storms that will knock the power out. And if you only have three or four people working on it, it'll take weeks at a time, and that's happened before. Now, since we have been with Brunswick Electric, that time has been cut way down. I think the last time we were out, I was out the longest. I was out for 10 hours, but they have corrected that problem near my home.
And what is the timeline then on burying those power lines?
Well, that's part of our overall long-range plans for that. There's no time limit.
And so when could citizens of Southport expect to see
that? Well, we have started that now. We have started that. There has been some lines buried in and around Bay Street, and on near Howe, near the old courthouse too, and we have started the program. But you know, it's like anything else. There's a cost with that, and there's other things too that we have to provide for our citizens to work.
And so, when you talk about balancing the needs and the costs, and you think about Southport's budget, are there places that Southport could cut back on spending? Are there places where you think the city maybe spends too much?
Well, now, like I said, now remember that why people move to cities. They expect certain things. They expect protection. That's why we move to cities. You know, there's strength in numbers. We feel safe. We have an excellent police department there. Of course, that's a pretty high budget. I was in the police department there. I know that. We have an excellent fire department to provide all these services. And the cost benefit to our citizens, you can't put a price tag on that. The fire department, we have one of the most professional fire departments. The chief, we just promoted him to fire chief last year, and he's doing an excellent job down there, him and the assistant chiefs. And we're also, with his training and experience and what he's done with that department, has decreased our insurance costs, so it's actually a benefit. You see, costs that we could possibly reduce. Well, we're working on that too. We have our long-range goal is that our fund balance is going to be increased in the next 3 years by 30%. We're doing rate studies to see if we can maybe perhaps lower some of the rates that we charge our citizens. And we're implementing some new billing procedures, too, that's going to cut costs.
When we think about the recent news about the unregulated and potentially toxic chemical compounds in the Cape Fear River, which supplies drinking water for thousands of people in southeastern North Carolina, how do you see that as potentially impacting Southport? And does that make you think any differently about planning for the future in terms of Southport's water supply?
Well, our environment is certainly a concern, not only mine, but everyone else around us. We want it safe for our citizens and for future generations. I do get reports every day about the Gen X situation. Everybody's concerned about that. And we also had a concern about some recent fly ash that was released at one of our power plants, Capital Power. And we've been dealing with that to see if that's toxic. Yes, we're concerned with that. But we have to realize, too, that we're an industrial nation, too. And all these comforts and conveniences sometimes we have to pay a price. But we hope that those folks that are in that the industrial part of our society use good judgment and really help us out on making everything safe. And we depend a lot, too, on our environmental people to tell us, you know, that if anything is dangerous to our health and hazardous. The other thing, too, is that we have our own water department, and they do checks and balances on our water system to make sure that it is safe for our people.
And, of course, they're checking to see if the water supply is in compliance with current regulations.
Yes.
Probably state and federal regulations. Part of the issue surrounding these toxic chemical compounds is that there are no guidelines or regulations around them.
Yes, ma'am.
Is that something that gives you concern?
It does. It does that. But, you know, we place a lot of trust in our people that monitor all that, and hopefully that they're going to make it safe for all of us here.
We had a caller ask, what progress have you made in attracting grant writers, nonprofit foundations, state and federal legislators in an effort to obtain $3 to $4 million in funding to move forward with the Southport Waterfront Project? The caller says it cost the city and taxpayers about $180,000. Work was completed in 2014, and no one is doing anything.
I don't understand that. We've just completed some work on the waterfront down there. We had some damage during Hurricane Matthew, and that has been almost completed, the work done on that. And I was down there today. It was looking real good. And there's still a little bit of work done that they need to do on that down there, but it's taking shape. Our waterfront is one of our greatest attractions, and we're working on that. We've just got a new city manager that has some good ideas, too, about that, and he's working on some of those grants and concept. Now, that concept, too, you have to realize that when they put that in, that's what it was a concept. And it's not etched in stone, so we're going to kind of use that as kind of a format to proceed forward with that.
And then briefly, Southport officials, of course, were hoping the state legislature would pass a bill that allows municipalities in Brunswick County to charge an additional tax up to 0.5% on prepared food and beverages.
Yes, ma'am.
to fund erosion mitigation. Right now, the bill sits in a finance committee. What could you do as mayor to keep things moving in Raleigh?
Well, actually, we're planning a trip to down there at the end of this month to talk with our representatives about that and some other things, too. So that's what we're going to do with that.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Jerry Dove, thank you so much for
being
with us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Joe Pat Hatem, thanks also for being with us, and Karen Mosteller. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Associate producer is Rachel Keith. Production assistant is Caitlin Hanrahan. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org. Get the podcast or find it on the WHQR app. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. And join us for Coastline Live Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on HQR News 91.3 and 98.9 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.